have a hard time when government officials come into communities and disrupt the structure that is put in place by the people. The fact that this road is an issue, you know, the mine has gone on in the past, but the road itself is something that is not a Redfern issue. It's clearly a government issue. It is a government that wants this road through. Now, this road goes right through the heart of our traditional territory. We have a treaty in place that has never been acknowledged. The assessment has never acknowledged us. The only time we were ever acknowledged was when it was beneficial to Redfern issues. I have a hard time with it because I've sat down with government officials and talked with them. I've sat down with Redfern a number of times and talked with them. I've sat down with Norm Ringstad. I've sat down with the president. And I live on the land. I walk the land. I know the animals there. There's a place on that map there where there's canyons on each side of where the road goes through. That's a potential area for migratory animals going through there. From the Kuthai all the way down to the Taku River, which is about 50 miles, it's all downhill. It's a downgrade. So no matter where they have a spill in there, it's going to go down to the river where the salmon are, where the bears are, where the moose are. That whole area is a migratory area. I've had a hard time of expressing that at a table. You know, my idea surrounding this is that if there's, I want to say at this time that I'm in full support of an international joint committee going over this road, because we have to filter it through so that it's beneficial for the people on each side of the border. Any time assessment was done, it was done after the fact that someone came in and said, well, what about this? That area is potential for slides all the way down. I know it. I walk that area. My trail goes right on the side where the road goes. It touches our migratory trail all the way down.
Mr. Jack, with all due respect, I have a couple options here. My role is, as committee chairman, has managed time, and I'm doing a poor job of it. We're running out of time. The Senate hearing starts at 3 o'clock. We can do a couple things here. We can run a democratic process here. Those that have already testified and would like to go over there to the Senate hearing can do that. The problem is that some of the gentlemen that are here listening to this testimony won't hear it, and we're checking to see if the Senate can delay their meeting a little bit. But I'll have to ask everyone, try to summarize their comments, because we still have quite a few people who want to testify.
Yes, okay. Well, I'll just let it go at that. I just want to let you know I'm in full support of the International Joint Commission, because if we can filter it in any way at all, like at this time I want to say, and I want to clearly state it, that I don't think that I have any support from the government. And I'm saying that as an individual, as a Taku River Tlingit, that is sitting at a treaty table that is not acknowledged. Thanks, Chief.
Appreciate your traveling all this way to testify. And I'll have to take a full responsibility. Your wife was signed up twice, and the second time she signed her name below yours, so I kind of goofed that one up, so don't blame her. We'll just avoid any domestic things here. Okay, moving right along, we have, I'm going to maybe pop around to a couple areas in the state that have been listening in. We have some.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, I know this is probably totally out of order, but we have brought an elder with us, and because you're referencing a different area, like, I don't want you to miss him.
Okay, all right.
I'm sorry, but
who is?
William Campbell.
Okay, Mr. Campbell. We'll be sure to get you, Mr. Campbell. I hope I'm not really messed up protocol here going backwards, but forgive me if I am. Let's go to Fairbanks, Mr. Roger Burggraf, can you possibly, are you still by?
I sure am. I'm Roger Burggraf, live at 830 Sheep Creek Road, Fairbanks, Alaska. I have lived and worked in Southeast Alaska. I've worked both in the mining industry and in the fish and wildlife. I support current resolution number 4. I feel that unfortunately, I cannot support Governor Noll's position on the Tesquala sheep mine. I feel that the governor has been misinformed by environmental groups and other special groups with regard to the mine and the permitting process. I had a lot more that I wanted to say here, but I'll try to cut it down so it's short and sweet. I feel that with the present permitting tools that are in place and the cooperation between Canada and the United States, that this mine can be developed in an environmentally sound manner. And I feel that there's been a lot of fear tactics that have been used here today. I do understand the concerns, but I've seen many mines, recent mines that have been developed that have been done so in an environmentally sound manner, and I feel that this can be done and that we're sending some bad messages and trying to stop this from occurring. We do not need to go to the International Joint Commission under the Boundary Waters Treaty, and I feel it can be handled adequately between Alaska and Canada. Thank you.
Thank you for your brief and precise testimony. Mary Nordale in Fairbanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mary Nordale. I'm at 100 Christian Street, 311 Fairbanks. I, too, support the House Concurrent Resolution Number 4. I'll be brief and simply suggest to you that it appears from the language of the concurrent resolution that the International Joint Commission would have nothing to decide, since there are no transboundary impacts. And if the assurances of the British Columbia government are correct, then Alaska would and the United States would have no interest in the project. I think that the people who speak in favor of the International Joint Commission believe that its jurisdiction is far wider than it truly is, but it really is just a commission to reconcile differences between the two nations. The Tulsiquot Chief project is important for a couple of reasons. One, of course, is that it is a mine, historic, and capable of sound, environmentally sound development. The other is that it's very important to keep the Taku River open as a transboundary water upon which commerce can take place, even if the commerce is something more than a motorboat. But there are a lot of people who live or have summer homes along the Taku, and if we turn down the Tulsiquot Chief, we will be adding one more brick in the wall that will prevent people from accessing the Taku River for fishing, for sports, for recreation, for whatever. And I would urge that the House pass the resolution as quickly as possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nordell. Is that, does that cover everybody in Fairbanks who wanted to testify?
Yes, it does, Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
Yes. It does. Yes, it does, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. I would like to go back to Juneau now to Mr. William Campbell, and I'd like please accept my apologies if I've ignorance. And
my name is William Campbell from half of B.C. I was raised by my grandparents from Juneau, Alaska here. Thank you. What what I like to say, we didn't want that road to come in. I got it for 45 years. I should know a game, what it does, what the game, the road. I got it up Dempster Highway for 18 years. I know what it does to the game, the road. And that's what I want to bring up here. And when the road went in, it wasn't right up to Peel River. They call it name the river, Peel River. And since the road went in, the game has left the area. I got it there for 18 years. And I got it for ex-cop and a rest for her. Mr. Lowe, named Mr. Lowe up there. And then all the game that left, and we had to use a guide up there for them, and pretty hard to get a game up there at that time. At that time, the road went in, with so many caribou, we had to stop before, stop the truck, so the caribou could cross. They don't go by the 5,000, 10,000. Then after the road went down to Peel River, there was no caribou around. And that's what I figured this road going to do to our area, Tekuri Singit's area. And that's the reason why we didn't want the road to go coming here. And on top of that, we didn't want the mine to be open because it's going to ruin all the fishing spots.
Is that everything you wanted to say, sir?
Pardon?
Are you done, he said, Uncle.
Yes, I'm done. Thank you very much.
Is there any questions for Mr. Campbell? Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, we have, I've gotten word from the other body that the Resources Committee in the Senate will take up another bill first, so we have a little bit more time, but I'd like to be done by 3:15 if we could. We have Anissa, Barry, Rick.
Can I speak for her? She had to leave her husband.
Pretty dangerous.
Let's see. Is this, in her culture, is that an appropriate thing?
No.
Keep my bases covered.
Hey, your name obviously isn't Anissa. So.
No, I'm Clay Frick.
Okay. You're representing your wife, right?
I'm representing both of us, I guess, on this one. We're just. What would you do if your neighbor was doing something that would infringe upon your property? Would you want to install or installation that could seriously become a liability to your well-being? Some of our excuse me. Oh, yeah, this is just short. If I can, yeah.
I won't interrupt you.
Okay. Some of our legislatures who are wantonly putting Alaska and its resources at risk with HCR 4-SCR-7. How do we know the Tulsqua Chief Mine is an environmentally sound venture? What Canada does not admit to will make itself evident when our Taku River fisheries could be put at risk due to contamination upon tailing deposits and building road effects. The health of the Taku River, which ends up in Alaska waters, could be compromised with this if this mine is opened. Because we share this important waterway, the largest unroded protected watershed on the west coast of North America, our fish and game and wildlife and other federal agencies need to be included in the review of the mine. Let's let the International Joint Commission be the venue of our resolution to our concerns. It is the only way we can mitigate future problems with our neighbors upstream. Why do our legislatures feel it is so important to go out of their way to pressure the governor's stance on this issue? Do we Alaskans really feel so much compassion for Canada's natural resource depletion when it cannot even imagine its own fisheries and blames Alaska for its fisheries problem? I'm sorry, but we am not really to roll out, are not ready to roll out the red carpet for the Canadian mine upriver. And I'd like to just close with a personal comment on my own. I'm almost embarrassed that we are actually addressing this issue, especially after hearing some of the native issues that are occurring in Canada right now. And I really feel that in lieu of ferry blockings and some of the, I think, gasoline that was poured onto the fire by Premier Clark's administration at that time, that here we are sticking up for him right now in terms of trying to push a resource mine, I think it's kind of embarrassing. Thank you.
Thank you for your thoughts. His wife knows she did a good job.
Okay, I will.
Joel Bennett's here. Mr. Bennett, last time you were in here, I think you had your sheep sweater on, which is a picture of your back, and my committee is in my office. I have to come in and take a look at it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm quite proud of that picture. My name is Joel Bennett. I'm speaking for myself as a 30-year resident. I've been an active sport fisherman in Juneau for that long, and I'm speaking in that regard today. As you know, silver salmon, king salmon, fish from the Taka River are target species for sport fishing anglers here. We contribute quite a bit of money to the Juneau economy, I'd say over $2 million a year. And I've had personal experience with the Taka River. I know that it's an area of immense value as far as the salmon resource is concerned. I support Governor Noel's position to recognize the outstanding worth and contribution of these resources and the potential risk to them from improper resource development. This would include roading in sensitive areas, storage of mine byproducts in riparian areas, and problems relating to mixing zones. The key part of the governor's position is further IJC review. Parenthetically, I would note that Governor Knowles has been a friend in general to mining. The Red Dog and Greens Creek mines are two examples. Accordingly, the highest standard of permitting, I believe, should apply to this project, at least as rigorous as our own in Alaska, with all aspects of the project being reviewed before final go-ahead is authorized. Since this does not appear to be the case for the BC permit process, I would urge that Alaska support the International Joint Commission review of the mine project and its impact on the Taku River watershed. Without provision for this review, I would oppose HCR at this time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions, Mr. Bennett? Thank you. Good to have you back in the committee.
Thank you.
Mr. Mark Rorich. Mark Rorich here. He probably ran out of time. Philip Gray. Thank you for your patience, Mr. Gray.
My name is Philip Gray. I've lived in Juneau for around 20 years. I'm just testifying myself, although I was formerly employed by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game for over 20 years and worked in coho salmon research for about 18 years. One of the guys at Fish and Game called me and asked me if I would say something about this. I'm opposed to House Concurrent Resolution Number 4, and I favor Governor Knowles' proposal there on this International Joint Commission to protect our coho salmon habitat here and the other species. The Taku River is one of the major producers of coho salmon in southeast Alaska, and in the area, this mine is apparently a particularly susceptible area to damage, and for that reason, I support this International Joint Commission to protect the habitat to the maximum degree possible. I might mention that the Columbia River, the greatest salmon river on Earth, only has 3% of its salmon runs left. We've lost 97% there, and they said that the fish hatcheries were going to protect those fish up there. And they're all gone now. They lost 97%. We don't want that to happen in Alaska. I've talked to a lot of the biologists from the South 48 to Oregon and some of the Washington and some of the other areas down there, and they say if we lose our He said, particularly be careful of our coho salmon habitat up here, because once it's lost, you can't do anything to replace it. It's too expensive. So you want to protect your habitat to the maximum degree possible and prevent the damage from occurring. We can have the mine, I think, but I think this International Joint Commission is the best way to go to protect the fish. Thank you.
Very much. Any questions? Hearing none. We're getting down there. I'm afraid I can't read your writing. McKinnon, is that all?
Members of the committee, my name is Neil McKinnon. I'm a resident of Juneau. Five generations of my family have used the Taku River for hunting, fishing, and access. Let's try this first. To the early gold fields of 40 Mile, Circle City, and Atlin. And I might add that my great-grandfather was one of the discoverers of Atlin. My family has had a cabin on the banks of the Taku for over 40 years. I am not concerned by the mine. I am not concerned by the road. I am very concerned by the new attention, the environmental industry has taken in the Taku River. Saving the Taku is the new cause the enviro elite can use to justify their existence and funding. This is no pristine area, as the environmentalists are trying to portray. I can remember as a youth the operating mine that Redfern is attempting to open. This mine and road will not harm the Taku, its wildlife, its fish, or our lifestyle on the river. What will harm the Taku is the environmental lobby and the tactics they will use to save us. The coordinated campaign strategy to save the Taku River, and if you have not seen a copy of that, I can provide one to you, is quite clear about the aims of the environmental groups. That is, and I quote, to stop the immediate threats to this area and to establish a plan for the longer-term protection of its environmental values and the people in the region, end quote. The campaign's further goal and objective is, quote, to stop the mine in such a way that it ensures a developmental moratorium on the Taku watershed, end quote. They do not want a better project. They want to kill it. They do not want to save the Taku. They want to lock it up. They are using the Taku as the next cause to entice funds from large foundations and perpetuate their existence. I agree with the environment viro elitist that the Taku is unique and its uniqueness deserves to be preserved. But contrary to the environmental view, its uniqueness is because the Taku is the last river on the border between Alaska and Canada not encumbered by a park, wilderness, or wild and scenic river, or other restrictive designation. The freedom to use and access the last unencumbered transborder river must be preserved. I applaud the legislature for taking the initiative to keep the Taku free.
Sir, appreciate your input. Any questions? Hearing none, we have Bob Carmichael, and then we'd like to wrap. Oh, we have two and a couple.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry.
Bob Carmichael is from Redfern. He's already testified. We have Wayne Wheeling and Ketchikan. Are you folks still standing by in Ketchikan?
Yes, we are. Can you hear us?
Thank you for your patience.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to, I'll be very brief on this, on Resolution 4. We're currently, and I believe most people are aware of the Pacific Northwest fisheries and the current listings of endangered species. And I really believe that we can avoid some of those fisheries problems by protecting our habitat. And the proposed mine is not, can't really ensure that the fisheries habitat could be protected. I guess the question could be asked, why are we concerned in southern southeast for the fisheries? Well, if the fisheries decrease on a whole and the Taku River as a result of habitat loss on the Taku, it would put more pressure on the southern southeast Alaskan fisheries. And I really support the governor's position and urge referral to the International Joint Commission to resolve this problem. I think it's a two-day. We don't want to damage something and try to repair it later, son. And I'll conclude my testimony. And thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for your patience and your brevity. Mr. Mike Saley, are you still there?
Yes, this is Mike Saley. I'm from Ketchikan. I was born here. I'm a commercial fisherman.
harvest diver and small sawmill operator. Although my commercial fishing is not involved with salmon, I do have an intense interest as a deckhand on a fish-packing boat traveling down through the Inside Passage in the 60s and early 70s. I saw what the Canadians did to their Vancouver Island when they logged the thing from the shoreline up to the tops of the mountains. I'm not impressed with the Canadians' environmental practices, and I am not advocating environmental groups who are getting back east funding, but I am concerned about my own backyard. I don't know anything about the International Joint Commission, but I do support anything that gets this issue as looked at as much as possible. I'm currently not real enthused with House Resolution Number 4 that's trying sounds like they're trying to sidestep getting this thing thoroughly looked at. I'll end my comments there. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anybody in the teleconference network that has not testified at 1 or 2? And I know I said I would close. Is there anybody that signed on the list that didn't get an opportunity to testify? Make sure I'm not missing anybody. Okay, I'll close the public part of the testimony and invite the administration up to your position and to answer some questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be as brief as I can. I'm Rob Bosworth. I'm Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Fish and Game. I believe John Katz is still on the line. John has a few comments to make after mine. I'll be speaking to the biological and economic context for the project, some of which you've already heard, and I've attempted to edit my comments accordingly. I don't want to be duplicative. We do have concerns about the Telsico Chief Mine, and those concerns are related to salmon and salmon habitat. Itaku is the largest salmon producer in the region. It produces up to 2 million salmon annually. This compares to many of the state's largest salmon spawning systems, the Copper River, the Susitna, the Yukon, in some years. All these rivers produce at the approximate level of the Taku. Our concerns about the effects of mine development on the Taku River salmon habitat and salmon production are the same concerns we would have if a mine were proposed for any one of these other large salmon producers in Alaska. If this were the Copper River, you can be sure we'd be asking the same questions and seeking the same assurances about water quality, tailings disposal, and road development. The economic value of the Taku River salmon resource to Alaskans is very large. For example, the commercial gillnet fishery, which you heard about, the gillnet fishery for sockeyes alone is worth about $2.8 million to about 100 permit holders. You can add to that the value of the commercial troll harvest of cohos, about another $1 million. As I've mentioned, the Taku regularly produces the largest salmon run in the region. Sport fisheries take tremendous advantage of that. We estimate that in 1997, over 32,200 anglers participated in the Juneau sport fisheries, and they fished over 140,000 angler days. To cut this short, I'll just say that about 40% of that harvest came from the Taku. That's cohos and kings.
Personally, Tess, it seems like I fished about 100,000 of those days.
Very good.
Do fish.
The reason the state is particularly concerned about the Telsico Chief project has to do with its location. You've heard about the mine and the issues, the road, rather, and the issues related to the road. I won't reiterate that, except to say, regardless of whether this is a private road or it goes on and it has a specified lifetime or goes on into the future, the road will be used to transport toxic chemicals and ore concentrates alongside many miles of salmon habitat. You know that the site is adjacent to the largest salmon rearing area on the river. That's Flanagan Slough. And again, it's on the largest salmon-producing river system in southeast Alaska. The largest Taku stock of cohos spawns immediately below the project location. Siting a project of this type in the floodplain of a major salmon-producing river system presents special risks and challenges. We believe there is quite simply a risk of catastrophic loss of salmon production. We think it's reasonable to hold to very high standards any project proposed for such a location. We also think it's reasonable that critically important concerns be resolved prior to permitting, yet the Canadian process does not require this. Consistent with our perspective, we found baseline scientific studies necessary to resolve key issues up front to be inadequate or lacking. I want to reiterate that while we have numerous concerns regarding water quality, road building, and tailings disposal, we do think these concerns are resolvable. Our Canadian technical counterparts have agreed our concerns are legitimate ones, and we're making progress with the Canadians. In our discussions with Canada, we have begun to agree on reasonable mine development standards, a major advance, and this has happened in the 11 months that Mr. Ringstad spoke of, an 11-month period, I might add, that we do not think would have been available to us had we not approached the possibility of the IJC referral. That did get the attention of the Canadians, and I think we've all benefited, including the Canadians, from that referral and from the discussions we've had since then. In summary, Alaska has an enormous economic interest in this watershed. We're proud of the fact that our salmon stocks are healthy, including the Taku River stocks, and we want to keep them that way. The bottom line is that when we look at the costs and the benefits of the Tulsiquitchief mine, it appears that the risks are all on our side of the border and the benefits are on the Canadian side. Having said that, we've never said no to a mine. At this point, we're working to get answers to serious questions, and we're asking to have a specified, meaningful role in the permit process. From my perspective, the IJC referral, as I indicated, has helped get us to the table by emphasizing to Canada how serious we are about the mine development issues. An IJC referral can help keep us at the table in that meaningful role. With that introduction, I'll pass off to John Katz to elaborate. I think he'll pay particular attention to these diplomatic issues. Thank you.
Thank you. Is Mr. Katz available?
I was told that he might have dropped off.
Okay.
We apologize.
That's fine.
We gave the people the preference here. And mm-hmm. So I have some questions. Does anybody else? I'd defer to other people first. Mr. Bosworth.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just wanted to know, Mr. Chairman, when did the governor file or petition to have this, whatever process was used to go to the IJC, when did that occur?
April last year.
Okay.
April 98.
Thank you. Also, I'd like to note for the record that Representative Whitaker, Senator Harris, President Morgan, Representative Jewell, and myself have been here for the entire meeting, and thank you all for your audience and patience. What recourse does the state have if the Canadians don't live up to their promises? Let's assume that this resolution is passed and the governor sees the wisdom in the resolution and withdraws his request to the commission, and they don't live up to their end of the bargain. The water quality is damaged. There's some environmental problems. A truck with the load of something toxic goes off the road and goes into the creek. I mean, just worst case scenario. What recourse under international law or otherwise does the state have?
Mr. Chairman, we're not aware that we have any recourses.
That mean there aren't any?
I'm not the expert on this topic, but I have asked that question, and that's the answer I received.
From whom?
Actually, I was discussing it earlier with Kerry Howard, who's with us from Office of Management and Budget, which oversees the state coordination on this project.
But OMB is not the AG's office, right?
Would you like me to ask Kerry to speak on this?
Sure.
Mr. Chair, I'm Kerry Howard. I'm actually with the Division of Governmental Coordination, which is in OMB. And yes, we are not a legal entity. In talking with Mr. Bosworth earlier, we do not know about whether we have any recourses. I noticed that this is the same question that was posed to Mr. Ringstad earlier, and he did not know the answer. It's a question we would like an answer to, but we just do not have one at this time.
Well, this chairman would like an answer either from the Attorney General or office, or find out what kind of legal ramifications Canadians would have and what recourse we would have to address it either. I just don't know anything about the international law and how that works. One other question, Mr. Bosworth, how long a process is the IJC? I mean, how long until they're going to have their meeting and determine all this, or is this just go on until, maybe you could just explain a little bit about the process to us and the timing.
Mr. Chairman, actually, this was the topic that John Katz was going to cover. I don't have first-hand information. You have some on that? Great. Carrie can cover some of that.
Mr. Chairman, the IJC, at this point, I just want to make it real clear, too, the IJC has not accepted the project for review. It takes a binational referral to do it, and Canada has not agreed at this point. If and when a project is accepted for review by the commission, it can take anywhere from 3 to 5 years, is what we've been advised, for the IJC to complete its review and findings.
So, Carrie, is you said it takes a binational approval or referral?
Binational request for a referral. So both U.S. and Canada would have to agree that a referral to the IJC had merit before the IJC would consider it. That has not happened at this time.
Well, that's interesting. It seems to me that looks like the Canadians aren't going to agree.
Yeah, I think that's what they would respond if asked the question.
So, what, I guess my question is, if the Canadians don't agree, which doesn't seem like it's in their interest to agree, is this, why are we here?
That's a good question. I would like to reiterate one point. Even though the project has not been accepted by the IJC for review, as Mr. Bosworth indicated, we do feel that the governor's request for one up the ante on the entire review and did compel further government-to-government diplomatic relations that have taken place over the last 11 months. But again, I think both sides would agree have been very fruitful in resolving and identifying remaining issues. So even though there has not been an IJC referral or acceptance, just the notion that the governor thought it was important enough to ask for one has given us further seat at the table that otherwise we do not legally have.
All right, Representative Jewell.
Just to follow up on the question, the Canadian government chooses not to get involved in this, and this doesn't go to the IJC. What then happens? They can go ahead with the project as it's permitted through the Canadian government? What happens?
Through the chair, they are continuing with their BC process. As Mr. Ringstad indicated, a project certificate has been issued by the BC Environmental Assessment Office. At this point in time, the way the Canadian process works is further review is applicant-driven. That is, as the applicant comes in the door with their various permit requests, the BC and Canadian federal government will continue to process those. The one permit that's come in the door thus far is for a special use permit for road construction, and that has been in review since this past fall. So they are proceeding with their permitting process.
Any other questions?
Mr. Bosworth, what involvement has your department and other departments in the state had with the Canadian government on this, and what are the questions that, obviously there must be some questions that you haven't had answered to sufficiently that prompted the governor to move in this direction. Can you explain that to us? So what some of your concerns are? We've heard from many of these people about possible contamination of the river and various things of that nature. What are your concerns as an agency involving the state?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Harris, I did mention that the concerns we have fall generally into the category of road construction and maintenance, of tailings disposal, and their ongoing maintenance is a aspect of that as well, and general considerations having to do with water quality. So it's fish and it's fish habitat. We're concerned about that the road be built and most important perhaps, or equally important, maintained to standards that provide for fish passage and that avoid problems such as sedimentation or siltation. The speaker earlier was accurate in that the road does traverse many miles of pristine spawning habitat, certainly migratory corridors for salmon, as well as wildlife. So there are many concerns, and they're the same concerns we have for road building in Alaska, and we would hope to apply the same standards. Fish passage is essential. And, you know, what does it mean to close a road? Does that mean that the bridges are taken out and fish passages is assured? Does it mean that somehow the roadbeds are treated in such a way that you don't get sloughing and siltation of important spawning beds? These seem to us to be reasonable questions to ask, and those are the kinds of things that we are asking. And we are working with Canadians to find answers. And I did mention that we seem to have good agreement at this point on standards. That's, as we see it, sort of step one in a rather lengthy process, perhaps, or at least in an ongoing process, which would then include gathering baseline data, analyzing that data, and then discussing how that data is used in permitting. So I described the fact that it was step one in that sequence. With regard to tailings disposal, I think I would just be reiterating some of the other points that are being made. How stable is the tailings disposal site? Are there other sites that might be more stable? What are the geologic and hydrologic effects on that tailings disposal site? What is the possibility of a flooding event causing a catastrophic failure? Or, by the same token, what about a chronic sort of, maybe perhaps our greater concern, a chronic seepage that would have a different effect on fish than the acute toxicity studies which were described to you that had been conducted. Water quality, I guess, is a part of all of this, whether it's from sedimentation or whether it's from toxicity due to effluent runoff or seepage. I will point out the one thing that hasn't mentioned was the concern that the standards for effluent dispersal in the river be adequate for not only high water events, not only midwater events, but also low water events. You have a river system that we've described as braided. What about when the river channel shifts and suddenly the mixing zone is effectively dewatered? First of all, is that a possibility? And if so, what is the likely effect of that?
One quick follow-up. I didn't mean to interrupt that long. So am I correct then in hearing one of the answers there that if the Joint Commission accepts this request, and obviously if the Canadian government doesn't request it, it's not going to be accepted, but if they were to accept it, this would automatically delay the project for a minimum of 3 years, perhaps as long as five years or more.
Go ahead.
Representative Harris, through the chair. Factually, there's nothing about even the acceptance of a project for review that would compel BC to stop permitting. That would be a choice. If Canada does agree, an IGC referral is appropriate, likely they would also agree that permitting can wait, but there's nothing that compels that. Particularly since the IJC is federal to federal, it's done through our State Department and through the Canada Department of External Affairs, and so while Canadian External Affairs is likely consulting with the province, as the State Department is consulting with us, that is a choice the province would make.
Just one quick follow-up, Mr. Chairman. What kind of protection or what kind of ability to protect our rivers, or in this case our river, to the concerns of the local fishermen and sports fishing and that sort of thing? Are there any protections in place for us between the two countries?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Harris, are you talking about compensation in the event of a catastrophe?
Right.
Again, I think we don't have an answer for you. We will try and find one.
Thank you.
There's no other questions, so we've gone 15 minutes over what I said we were going to go over first time, and it's been a very interesting subject. I intend to hold the bill over. I'd like to have that question answered for sure, and there's a number of people here. So thank you very much, and appreciate everybody's patience.